Golf Today.
Golf Today continues on a Monday. Damon Hatt alongside Ryan Lavner, and we have some breaking news on this Monday. Tiger Woods has just withdrawn from competing at the Genesis Invitational, of course, a tournament he hosts this year to be played on Torrey Pines South. We've been building up for this week. It was an interesting last couple of days, maybe some surprise that we thought he was going to play, and now the news that he won't.
Yeah, I was surprised to see him even commit to the Genesis Invitational. I understand sort of the pull. He's this tournament benefits his foundation. You know, obviously he has reasons that way. Competitively, this was most likely going to be the only competitive reps that he was going to get ahead of the Masters, so I understand all that. But, you know, he's just had a traumatic event over the past week or so with his mom, Tita, passing away. You don't know how he's grieving with that as well. The forecast also didn't look particularly conducive for sort of the health issues that he has with temperatures in the 50s, rainy, wet, difficult. Not totally surprised. It is obviously a surprise to see him WD, but I was sort of surprised to see him even in the field at all.
Yeah, I was surprised that he committed to play. I'm also surprised that he withdrew. Everyone grieves in their own way in the amount of time that they need to. We don't know the reason why, whether he will ever give one or not. But listen, we just know that this was it's going to be a big story either way, whether he was going to play or whether he was not going to play. And now we just have this statement from Tiger Woods. This is just coming up now. I plan to tee it up this week, but I'm just not ready. I did my best to prepare, knowing it's what my mom would have wanted, but I'm still processing her loss. Thanks to everyone who has reached out. I hope to be at Torrey later in the week and appreciate the continued kindness since my mom's passing. So there you go. There's a son
totally reasonable
processing the death of his mom.
Yeah, totally reasonable explanation. I think everyone would certainly understand that. You know, over the past couple months, the conversation has been about, is Tiger ready competitively? You know, he talked to the PNC Championship. Yeah. I'm not ready to compete at this level. By all accounts, he had gotten to a point where he's able to put himself inside a signature event with 72 players, the very best in the PGA Tour. And then you have, obviously, the death of his mother sort of throwing a wrench in those plans. Obviously, best wishes to Tiger. I'll be curious to see if he still sort of fulfills the tournament obligations he has as well as tournament host, but not going to be in the field this week.
It had to be difficult when you lose a parent. We just saw Tita a week before her passing. She was at TGL, had that fun interaction with Tiger. Tiger telling her, I'm not going to suck tonight, Mom, and just kind of some more insight into their close relationship. And then she was gone. He's releasing the statement, you know, and their love and their relationship. She, of course, shotgunned for so many of his great moments. And then she passes away suddenly, and he tries to play, and now he just says, you know what, it's just not the right time for me to be able to do that.
And you think back to when Tiger's father, Earl, passed in May 2006, right? And he shows up at the U.S. Open, admittedly was not quite ready, then shuts it down for another month and then turns up at the Open Championship and wins that one. Everyone grieves differently, and I certainly understand that. But I think the unexpected nature of Tita's unfortunate passing is totally understandable that Tiger Woods would sit this one out.
Yeah, let's continue this conversation with Jaime Diaz, a longtime golf writer and contributor here at Golf Channel Now. You've covered Tiger longer than anyone. Jaime, your reaction to the news that Tiger now will not tee it up this week at Torrey Pines?
Well, I think Ryan just made a great point. You know, Tiger took Earl's loss hard and in somewhat of a delayed reaction. It really hit him at the U.S. Open in 2006. And, you know, it's only been a week with Tita's loss. And it's maybe even a tougher one because this comes later in life and she's been a grandmother and so, you know, just so vital to his everyday life that it's totally understandable that he's not quite over that. Could be other things physical, but I think psychologically that's got to be the biggest factor. And as Ryan also pointed out, he went and won the British Open in 2006 right after that. So I think when he does come back, it'll be with an extra determination and he'll want to dedicate it to his mom's memory.
I mean, I know you touched on it last week when Tita passed away, but what do you think is her enduring legacy? Earl Woods gets so much credit and is part of the news cycle, but Tita behind the scenes, what do you think was her importance to Tiger, and what do you think her enduring legacy will be for him?
Well, I think her enduring legacy is that she was always there, unconditional love, no matter what, thick and thin, a lot of difficulties being Tiger Woods, the fame, all the demands. She was the person he could go to and, you know, not necessarily have long discussions about it, but just feel comforted and knowing that he had support no matter what happened, whatever decisions he might make publicly, which he often got criticized for, he was scrutinized for. If he had her blessing on those things, I think he felt very secure in the decisions he made. So I think that was huge. I think just, you know, her competitiveness, obviously Earl was competitive too, but Tita even more so. And Tita was very organized, very, very much buttoned up. Earl, you know, he was certainly a guy from the military, but his own personality was a little looser and more fun as far as just, you know, being spontaneous. Tita could be spontaneous, but always with a plan to be extremely, methodically ordered. And I think Tiger really took to that. That might have been just hardwired in him. But I think his mom example had a big role in that as well. And just so many things as far as the way she was really a very tough person, but a very loving person. Somebody who, you know, didn't trust easily, but when she did, it was all the way. And I think Tiger exemplifies that. He's got really close friends, but a small circle. And Tita was like that too.
You know, Jaime, I imagine it's difficult for the legends to see their skills diminish, to become a number one player, to becoming a ceremonial golfer or just less than you were. How do you think Tiger Woods is going to handle the next playing chapter, whatever it looks like?
I don't think he believes he's entered it completely. And, you know, it's interesting. I know we came on today thinking he was going to be playing, and I was watching Brandel's breakdown of his swing at the TGL, and it really was a dynamic golf swing that he was making. I mean, it wasn't 2001 Tiger Woods, but it was better than it's been. And it's a fairly youthful body still, as beat up as it's been. He's an athlete. He's a superstar athlete. He's an incredible genius athlete. And a lot of that is still in there. I'm not saying he can do it, but because there's so much to golf. I really, when I think of him now, I worry almost more about his short game and his mental game, because he gets, you know, these moments where he just kind of seems to lose the focus where he never used to. But I think if he's not in pain and he's pushing off that right foot as he was with the swing that Brandel was breaking down, I just feel like he's still capable. I'm not saying he's going to be a winner all the time at all. I'm only saying I think he plays a very respectable PGA Tour quality game, and he can still do it if he's feeling okay. Now, obviously, things like this, you know, create doubt that can he go 72 holes? Can he walk? But you watch him move as he's walking now, and it's the gait is a lot more graceful and a lot smoother. And the golf swing keeps getting better. So I think if he's feeling less pain, he's still a legitimate player, just like Phil Mickelson was when he won the PGA Championship. Without the injuries, of course, those are always the X factor with Tiger. But the big thing about Tiger is he's so determined, so focused. And you go back to Ben Hogan, and, you know, after his car accident, obviously 53, had an incredible year. But even after that, as he aged, he still would play in the U.S. Open and be very credible, almost won it a couple more times. Did win in Colonial in 1959, almost won the U.S. Open in 1960. I just think the greats have a capacity if they want to do it. And I really get the sense that Tiger still wants to do it. I know when he gets out on that senior circuit, not to say he's going to play all the time, but he really wants to win that U.S. Senior Open. So I think a lot of this is preparation for that as well.
I was just going to ask, Jaime, like, why do you think he still wants to do it? What do you think is still the driving force for Tiger? Is it records? Is it Charlie? Is it ego? Where do you sort of fall on that?
Well, that's great, Ryan. I mean, I think it's all three. I think more than anything, though, it's just love of the game. I think it's just the most fulfilling thing he does, other than obviously his family. But I mean, in terms of his activities and what he expresses himself with as an artist, really, as an athletic artist, that's what gives him a thrill. That's why he keeps practicing all the time. That's why he likes going out with the young guys and testing himself. And just, you know, being able to do it at that high level for as long as he can. He doesn't want to let go. I mean, that's the thing about Tiger. You know, there's just no quit in him, and he doesn't want to quit, his career. There's always the thought, oh, go out on top. Don't let your legacy be in any way, diminished. I don't see it that way. I think, you know, the great ones, just keep playing as long as you feel like you want to, and you'll know when it's time. And I don't think he thinks it's time yet. Obviously, he's been robbed of some years because of injuries, and I think he wants to make up for those still. So I think Charlie's a big factor, absolutely. He's kept him younger and active, and I think he wants to set that example for him and show him what it's all about inside those ropes. And I think that the father and son, when they play there, that's one of the greatest things Tiger's ever felt, probably. And I don't think he wants to give that up at the highest level.
Jaime, I was fortunate to walk inside the ropes with Tiger 06 at Hoylake, also at Medina for the PGA Championship. I was struck by his hands. He hit a shot into the 72nd hole. The tournament was already won at that point, and how soft his hands seemed on the club. So everybody talks about his power. How important and crucial and critical have his hands been to everything he's accomplished in this game?
Well, I think it's the most underrated part of it because as a young player, you know, and we're talking really young, 5, 6, 7 years old, he's winning tournaments. He was obviously he's playing against 10 and 11 year olds, and he's hitting it, you know, way shorter than they are. So where did he try to make that up? Obviously, he could hit the ball solid, not that far, but he could outperform them with his short game. And he became a short game specialist when he's like 8 years old. That's where he spent his time on this on the putting green and the chipping green, especially with John Anselmo later after Rudy Duran taught him. He would make a point of, you know, spending most of his time because he had fun with it. He liked creating shots, but he also knew that was the difference. He was getting the power, but he knew a lot of the guys who had power that he was playing didn't have great short games. He was going to have both. And as he extended that into his pro career, he just wanted to have everything. I mean, if there was a weakness, he was going to work on it and hopefully make it a strength, but certainly not a weakness any longer. So I think those special shots and the special feel for the club and, you know, club head awareness, as they say, out on the PGA Tour, he's exceptional with that. And I think he knows he has, I keep using that word, genius level in his hands. And his hands are the difference maker. When his timing's not right, you know, he can save shots. He used to talk about that all the time. I had my C game, but my hands saved me. So I guess, Damon, you know, all the great ones have great hands. You know, I know talking to Cliff Drysdale once, an old tennis player who plays a lot of tennis with Jack Nicklaus, and when Jack could still play a lot of tennis, great around the net, tremendous, you know, volleys and reflex shots and touch. And Jack was an athlete and Tiger's an athlete. And I think the hands might have been their greatest attribute.
Wow. I mean, your perspective is absolutely priceless. Thank you so much for joining us on this Monday.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Here he is, Jaime Diaz, as the news of the day. Tiger Woods withdrawing from the Genesis Invitational at Torrey Pines. More on this story. And Aaron Oberholzer joins us as well. Back on golf today, recapping the breaking news on this Monday. The golf world was excited to see Tiger tee it up this week at the Genesis Invitational, but Tiger announced just a few minutes ago on social media he will not be making his PGA Tour season debut on Thursday. He is withdrawing from this week's field. Released this statement on social. I plan to tee it up this week, but I'm just not ready. I did my best to prepare, knowing it's what my mom would have wanted, but I'm still processing her loss. Thanks to everyone who has reached out. I hope to be at Torrey later in the week and appreciate the continued kindness since my mom's passing. Aaron Oberholzer joins us now as part of the broadcast last week. You've known Tiger for a long time. AO, your reaction to his withdrawing and wanting to play, but just saying he's still processing the passing of his mom.
It's understandable, Damon. At the same time, I'm disappointed. I really wanted to watch him play, and I was hoping that I could potentially Rochambeau Billy Ray for to see who gets to walk with him the first 2 days. So I'm disappointed. I won't be able a chance to have a chance to see him play, but at the same time, I completely understand that he needs some more time to process Tita's passing.
AO, one of the big storylines last week in Phoenix where you were was Jordan Spieth's recovery from the hand issue. You've had your own hand issues throughout your career. How impressed are you that Jordan was able to make such a U-turn from Pebble to Phoenix and get himself into contention on the PGA Tour?
Honestly, I'm not that surprised. I think the guy is that great. I think he's I think the surgery that people are talking about, it's the same surgery I had. In fact, we saw the same surgeon. So I'm very well versed on what he had done. And I know that I don't have any problems now. That obviously my surgery, this is 15 years later. He's only 5 or 6 months out. 6 months, I'd say 6 months out from his surgery. But understanding that what he had done, I don't think that there's going to be any serious long-term effects, knowing how my hand feels on that side of the wrist, on that ulnar side of the wrist. And as far as him coming back, this, I think there's a matter of confidence. I talked to Michael Griller before the fourth round. I was on my way over to the compound, and I just caught him. He was in the caddy area, and I talked to him, and he said, "Look, he's really confident with what he's doing. He can get down into the ball, which is what he was really struggling with last year with his wedge play and his iron play." He said he's still got a couple of issues as far as potentially maybe uphill chips or chips that are up on an upslope, because he likes to play a lot of leading edge type chips and stick the leading edge in the ground. And I can see where that would be a little uncomfortable mentally, and not understanding that, you know, because last year that probably would have hurt, or that would have potentially knocked that tendon out of place, which creates a lot of pain. And so he's got to be able to hit those chips, continue to hit them over and over again, and let his mind know that everything's fine. It's not going to hurt anymore. It's not going to dislocate that tendon anymore. And it's going to be probably, I'd say, he's 6 months. It's probably going to be another few months before that, all that scar tissue really starts to form into the right spaces, if you will, and starts working for him rather than against him. Because right now he is dealing with a lot of scar tissue buildup in there, based on my own knowledge of what happened with my hand with that same surgery. And that's just going to have to be worked out. Once that is worked out and in line with the rest of kind of his tissues in there, he's going to be fine.
Ayo, moving on to the winner, Thomas Dietrich. He got the job done by 7 shots on that golf course with all that noise, with a very good leaderboard. What is the benefit of a quiet mind? He talks so much about meditation and what that means to him.
It's everything, especially around a place like Phoenix, where your mind's anything but quiet for 4 days. There's a lot going on out there. And so if you have a hard time quieting that mind, it's going to be a long week for you. So Thomas has done a lot of great work in that regard, obviously, because to win the way he won, to go down the stretch, I honestly, outside of a major championship and, you know, the bigger invitationals on the PGA Tour, I would say that for some people, myself included, it would be one of the hardest places on the PGA Tour to win coming down the stretch, just because of everything that you've got to deal with out there. It's unlike any other tour event that we play on the PGA Tour. There's more noise. There's more distractions. It's truly a sporting event. We always talk about it every year. And it's true, because it's so unique in that regard. So it takes a very unique mindset and concentration to be able to get it done coming down the stretch at Phoenix, because there are so many distractions and so much noise. And you got to be able to quiet it, and he did a phenomenal job.
Ayo, on that point, so much of the attention heading into the week was about the atmosphere, sort of reining in the hooliganism. How did you find it inside the ropes? Was it kinder, gentler, or was it sort of the same chaotic party that we've grown accustomed to seeing?
I was talking to a lot of Thunderbirds on my way around all 4 days, some of which I know fairly well. And I told them I felt like after the first day, it was extremely tame on Thursday. Friday was more raucous. Saturday got even more raucous. But from what I saw on the ground, I didn't feel like it ever went overboard. Now, in defense of the Thunderbirds in the Phoenix Open last year, that was a very unique set of circumstances that led to those events. And so I think with this year, with the combination of great weather and the combination of them doing a few things logistically with certain concession stands and where they're placed, I think that helped to kind of quell some of the hooliganism, as you put it, Lav. So I think that going forward, we're going to see a much better balance struck between fun, raucous proper fun, and golf.
Ayo, should aspects of the WM Phoenix Open be replicated at the Travelers in San Diego, anywhere, just a scintilla of what the WM brings year over year?
I don't think you can. I've seen it. I've seen it tried. I saw it tried in my career. I saw it tried when we used to play in Michigan at the 17th hole there. Hearing stories about people overnight burying kegs in the ground behind 17 green at the par three where we used to play in Flint. And so, you know, Warwick Hills, I believe it was. And but I don't think that you can create this atmosphere. It, when you look at the structure that's built there, I marvel at the engineering feats that the Thunderbirds and the Phoenix Open are able to pull off every year. And they add something new every year that just makes my head shake that they're able to build something out like this temporarily, a temporary structure. That's just, you know, I honestly believe that there's only one place that can really do this, and that's Phoenix. And, you know, people can try. I love the rink in Canada. I think that's very unique to Canada, obviously, because of hockey. I think that's really cool. But, you know, one week a year, this is truly special and truly unique. And I think if you tried to replicate it every week, or you try to do a hole like 16 every week, it'd kind of get gimmicky, in my opinion, and get old. And I think guys look forward to this week. The guys that love to play there, they look forward to this week every year, and they look forward to the uniqueness. And I don't think that they really want that. I think you'd lose that uniqueness if you tried to do it every week. I think the 17th at Sawgrass has its own kind of flavor that's somewhat like you know, the TPC Scottsdale and the WM. But it's still never going to be that.
Ayo, it's always great to spend time with you. Loved hanging out with you last week at TPC Scottsdale. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is. Winner at Pebble, Aaron Oberholzer. All right, when Golf Today continues, pace of play continues to be a hot topic in the game. And world number one Nelly Korda didn't hold back her opinion at the Founders Cup. Stick around to hear Nelly's thoughts on how to speed things up. Yesterday, Bradenton Country Club, Yalimi No, turned a one-shot deficit into a three-shot win over Jin Young Ko in the span of a couple holes in the back nine. She cruised from there for her first LPGA Tour victory in the Founders Cup. Upcoming schedule for the LPGA, the Asian swing begins. Honda LPGA Thailand, HSBC Women's World Championship, Blue Bay LPGA. The fourth championship, that's when this pace of play, a change in the rules is supposed to take place. The T-Mobile match play, JM Eagle, and the Chevron Championship as well. And speaking of pace of play, it continues to be a big topic in the game. And last week, ahead of the Founders Cup, LPGA members were informed of the updates, also received a memo outlining the new rules, which include stricter requirements to avoid penalties, the addition of a one-shot penalty as well. And here's what the world number one had to say.
So there was a meeting last night and slow play was discussed. Can you tell me your initial thoughts on the new program?
Finally. Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I think that's one of the things that I've just noticed over my time on tour is that, you know, we used to go from 5 hours, under 5 hours, to now it's just 5.5 typically our rounds. So I think that implementing harsher rules is just going to be good for the game of golf, because they were saying at the meeting, I mean, at the end of the day, like, we're a form of entertainment. So if we're taking really long out there, I mean, that's not entertaining.
What would you say was the general reaction in the room to the policy?
I would say it was pretty positive around, yeah. I think it was more of people were asking how the rules officials time exactly. Like, what if a rules official times, they don't see the ball still moving on the green and they start the timer, but it's not your necessarily time to hit because the other person, theoretically, the ball is still moving, right? So your time shouldn't start yet. So there were just questions about that. But I think over time, that's going to be ironed out. And, you know, I think everyone's it's going to be better for everyone that the rounds are going to be moving a little faster.
Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols joins us now. Beth Ann, how is this new policy actually going to be implemented?
Well, it actually won't take effect until the end of March at the Ford Championship. So this gives players a little bit of time to get used to the whole thing. But to give you a little just perspective, just big picture here, the one stroke penalty is new. And so in 2024, the LPGA doled out 22 fines and 9 two-stroke penalties. If this new policy was in place last year, they would have had 23 one-stroke penalties and 8 two-stroke penalties. So that will really get your attention. And I think it's important to note that this was a player-driven initiative. I think we really saw a tipping point last year at the Anika when, you know, to Nelly's point there, you know, Nelly and Charlie are playing in the last group on Saturday, and it took 5 hours and 38 minutes for that group. The tour missed their TV window by 51 minutes. It prompted Charlie Hull to say, forget fines and penalties. If you're a repeat offender, you should just lose your card. So obviously that didn't happen. But what did happen is during the offseason, a committee came together. They had several two-hour long meetings. And to the tour's credit, they're ready to rock with a new system that will go into effect in 2025. So I applaud them for making, you know, relatively quick changes.
Charlie Hull for commissioner. Biff, you were out there last week. How was the actual pace of play last week, now that this sort of warning has gone out that this is about to go into effect in a couple weeks?
It was good. You know, I talked to Nelly at the end of the final round. I said, how was it out there? And she said, you know, we didn't even sniff 4 hours and 45 minutes. And she's right. You know, obviously in those first two rounds, you're looking at threesomes there and well below that 4 hour and 45 minute mark. And then clearly well below the 4 hour mark in twosomes in round three and four. Now obviously, you know, conditions were great out there. This Donald Ross design Bradenton Country Club is easy to get around from green to tee. So they should have been playing at a fast clip, but you know, those are great numbers to start the season. And, you know, I think it's interesting because talking to Stacey Lewis, you know, she said, I think players, if they could just walk faster, we'd, you know, shave a lot of time off. But in talking to Angela Stanford, who of course been out on the tour for decades and just retired, she said the real problem really has been when players get to their ball, not being ready, you know, that it can take anywhere from 2 to 6 minutes for players to figure out what club they're going to hit, but their actual routine is quick, but just that selection process, they're just not ready to go. So I think, you know, the threat of these one-shot penalties will really hit them where it matters.
Well, you said how impactful the players have been in pushing this change forward. How impactful is it that the world number one, who can sometimes be a little bit reticent when it comes to much of anything, was very vociferous and clear on what she thought this issue was?
Oh, I think it's massive. You know, I think it's the LPGA really is so blessed to have its quickest player on tour be the number one player. She is the model that everyone should follow. And so I think that she, you know, really was, as you say, adamant that changes were in store. You know, I think that really prompted the tour to get into action. Also, Annika Sorenstam, you know, host of that event I was talking about, she said, you know, the little girls come out here and watch or are watching on TV. They need to be setting the example. These players need to be setting the example of how we want future generations to play the game. And of course, she wanted her field to be smaller going forward because even without any kind of delay, they were not finishing the first and second rounds. They were having to spill over into the next day. So, you know, if players can get moving, it will also hopefully preserve playing opportunities so you can have bigger fields going forward for some of these, you know, events that are restricted in daylight.
But then throughout the course of your career, why do you think the LPGA has been more stringent about pace of play, docking players for slow play than the PGA Tour counterparts have been?
You know, I think there's a little, you know, we have to. This is an area in which, you know, they realize, as Nelly said, that they're an entertainment product and they need to do those things that don't cost money yet have a great impact. And this is one of them. And actually talking to Angel Yin, she said that on the LET, you'll get an email after an event that will actually tell you which players got docked, who was slow. And she said on the LPGA, you know, she said they're a little kinder. They're just going to tell you the number of players, but they didn't actually name them. But, you know, hey, maybe that's something, if this doesn't catch on as quickly as everyone hopes, that they could move to that shaming step next. It's not a public thing. They're not releasing it to the media, but just shame amongst your peers might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, the change is coming down the pike. LPGA leading the way and the AJGA leading the way in this issue as well. Beth Ann, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The big news on this Monday, Tiger Woods withdrawing from the Genesis. Won't see him with 14 clubs this week.
Yeah, obviously a bummer for the tournament, bummer for Tiger. Best wishes out to go to his family. I guess the speculation now turns to, will we see Tiger ahead of the Masters in a couple months' time? The Players' Championship obviously makes so much sense, and yet we haven't seen him play the PGA Tour's flagship event since 2019. It's flat, strategic golf course, a golf course where you need to sort of have intimate knowledge, as Tiger Woods does, as a two-time winner. That makes the most sense. But then again, you also wouldn't surprise me if he just shelves it and we see him at Augusta National.
I hope he takes the time that he needs to grieve and process, as he said. But listen, Tiger Woods is Tiger. We know how he's built. You said one more win. Is this the year that's going to happen?
No. I don't think it is going to be the year that it happens. I just hope we see him this week in at least his tournament hosting capabilities.
No doubt. Golf Central, 4 p.m. We're back tomorrow at noon. Enjoy your Monday. We will see you then.